Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTube, hi. Hello. Smash the like button. Comment. Nikias, you're not off the hook this week because we did drop one last week. So hope you're ready for that later in this show in case you forgot. Nikias, it is indeed time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up for the last time in 2024 as we record early on a Monday. So not going to get the Monday slate. So hopefully nothing too crazy happens post-recording because Lord knows I would take that incredibly well. But either way, last pod of 2024, excited to chop it up. We have some news to break down on the transaction front, on the coaching front, and to close out 2024. We're going to give our early thoughts on the award races. Early thoughts, not set in stone. We got 3+ months left of NBA action left, but just where we are heading into the new year. But before we get to the award stuff and give ourselves collective headaches, let's get into some news. We had a trade, which made me chuckle a little bit because I thought a different trade was happening. So I was literally at church when the actual trade news broke. And I was like, wait a minute, that's not the team that I expected to get in on this. But fair enough. The Los Angeles Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets agreeing to a deal. The Lakers acquiring Dorian Finney-Smith and Shake Milton from the Nets. D'Angelo Russell, welcome back to the Brooklyn Nets, at least for now. Question mark, upward inflection. Maxwell Lewis and 3 second-round picks going to the Brooklyn Nets. Steve, what were your early thoughts about the Dorian Finney-Smith, D'Angelo Russell-themed trade between these two teams?
I was a little shocked. I think for me, when you look at the Lakers, defense has been a theme for them. Working to fix the defense has been a theme for them. Maintaining the defense has been key for them, especially after the start of the season. And so you've seen a team trying to kind of stabilize themselves on both ends of the floor, kind of raise the ceiling on both ends of the floor and give themselves wiggle room as they figure things out on each side. You know, we look at in totality, the offense for the Lakers was really good to start the year. And they were near the bottom defensively. It's like a tale of 2 months, Nikias. No glass cleaner here, but November, 7th in offensive rating, 25th in defensive rating. December, 23rd in offensive rating, 13th in defensive rating. So that kind of puts you in this position where, okay, I think our offense has a high enough ceiling. Can we get the defense in that same area? But overall, when you look at the Lakers, 6-2 since Max Christie rejoined the starting lineup, so to speak. Mm-hmm. In this stretch, they've held their opponents to 100 or less in 4 out of those 8 games. So it's clear, I don't know if we found the thing, but we have found something. And if you're the Lakers and you want more size on the court, you want more versatility defensively, you've again found something that resembles a formula. This makes sense. If you like what Max Christie has done and what he brings to the table and where that puts your team at, and you still want to improve your defense, you likely get better with Dorian Finney-Smith. I think you put yourself in a position where you can ensure you have it throughout the game. If you are sitting there and you feel like, hey, we've unlocked Austin Reeves, who is averaging 20.3 points, 7.4 assists, and 5.9 rebounds in December. If you feel like you've got Gabe Vincent in a place where, hey, we can rely on him to a degree, shooting 44.4% from 3 in December, probably feel a bit more comfortable parting ways from D'Angelo Russell. So I think it's a hand-in-hand move where with the Lakers, you're always kind of looking for the big swing for the fences. This is one that might make them more solid overall and help them, you know, kind of get the most out of this overall group. I myself am very intrigued to see what Dorian Finney-Smith looks like with the Lakers. I think it can get tough because you kind of take a player who you know can produce in a certain situation. Like we saw what he did in Dallas. The question was more so the shot than the defense. Started to show improvements there. Always had a playoff game where Dorian Finney-Smith has now made someone very upset. Now he kind of goes to Brooklyn. He's in a different phase, different role. He's needed, but also it doesn't elevate the team as much. Now he's kind of back in that role. He can play defense. He can elevate the Lakers that way. And quietly, while it's easy to say we probably don't expect the shooting to copy and paste, he is shooting 43.5% from 3 on 5.4 attempts this year. And if you look at the tracking data, 43.3% from 3 on catch and shoot. And that's like 5.2 of his 5.4 attempts. So that's kind of the shot diet that he would probably have in Los Angeles. Shooting 45.5% on above the rate threes. I think 43 from the left quarter, 38 from the right corner. So that works in a offense with Anthony Davis, with LeBron James, where you can get out and run in transition. I think obviously defensively, we know he can impact the game with his ball pressure. I think the one thing that's going to stand out, his ability to defend multiple positions. If this is a Laker team that wants to continue to lean into switching, that's going to help them. If you're talking playoffs, he can guard a whole lot of different types of people and kind of takes the load off of the rest of the team. But I think his work on the weak side, once he settles in, will stand out. The communication, the rotations, the early help, the being able to recover and help at the rim. I think it's easy to go in your mind to matchups, but he can elevate their base in that way.
I like that. I'm right there with you. Like, the first thing that stood out to me outside of, again, initial surprise, because like the early rumblings over the weekend was Memphis had a deal in place. It had a deal that was close with Brooklyn. And so I was anticipating on Monday, hey, we're going to talk about Dorian Finney-Smith with the Memphis Grizzlies. That's interesting. And so the Lakers swoop in. But to your point, the size and the switchability, I think, is what pops for me the most. And I think now entering a phase where if you keep Max Christie in the starting lineup, if Max Christie is just the smallest guy on the court for you, like, I think you're generally in a good spot just in terms of being able to shrink the floor. And because Dorian, to your point, can defend multiple positions, it makes it easier to switch. This is already a Lakers team. We talked about this early in the year. This is already a Lakers team that is switching a lot more than they did last year. So, like, they already kind of have that foundation in there. Dorian Finney-Smith should just slot right into that. I do wonder, like, bigger picture, as the Lakers naturally want to make the playoffs, stuff like that, how much of the switching would mitigate the need for, like, a player that they feel super comfortable with against smaller guards in particular. Because I don't know if that particular void has been filled. I think Dorian can switch a lot and can hold his own against most matchups. Like, once you get into some of the smaller, quicker, shiftier guys, like, what is that going to look like? That's also why it's a plus to have a guy like Anthony freaking Davis on the back line for you. If you are worried, let's just funnel inside there. But like, I am just curious, once he gets to play and stuff, like, just what that's going to look like. But overall, like, you get bigger, you pretty much recommit to Austin Reaves at this point. You mentioned the December number, so I don't have to rehash those. But if he's your primary initiator now, and again, he's technically one of the smaller guys on the floor for you. I think it helps the Lakers further establish that foundation of defense, something that they're further leaning into. So I like it. I'm intrigued by the second unit now, like what it's going to be first and foremost. And two, like you mentioned Gabe Vincent, if the shot falls, he is at least someone that is going to pressure you defensively and fight over screens and be annoying. Where does Shake Milton slide in? He's also shot well from three. He is someone that has shown throughout his NBA career he can self-create. How efficient is he ultimately going to be? How well will he hold up defensively? How much trust will he earn from J.J. Redick and the crew? But if he's able to hold up enough defensively, having that extra juice of, the extra creation juice coming off the bench, to your point, again, helps you alleviate some of what you're losing with D'Angelo Russell. Because he is someone that brought that to the table still, even in the midst of like the role shifts he had to deal with this year. So I like it. And, you know, asset-wise for Lakers, you get to bring in someone like Dorian. You don't touch any of the future first-round picks. That does set you up for doing something else if something else pops up to further, round out the roster as you make the playoff push the second half of the year. So it feels like pretty good work for me for the Lakers. I like it.
Now, where does Shake Milton slot in? I think Shake Milton takes Gabe Vincent's old spot, if we're being honest. But I think he'll be relied on and he'll stay ready and it'll work out. I think for me to add to it, it's optionality for the Lakers. So, we have Rui, we have Max Christie, we have Dorian, we have Cam Reddish. Like, we have options to feel good about the defensive person in that lineup or multiple of them being in the same lineup. To your switching and small guards point, I think, again, being able to lean more into the switching. And now, okay, these are our principles. Like, if we get beat, we have Anthony Davis back there. We're going to work to try and contain. We feel better about that as a base. Like, I just think having that overall size should help. Like, I'm intrigued by what lineups they try and go to, especially when you consider the Lakers have very quietly dabbled in playing some smaller lineups as the season has gone on. You know, you can call it LeBron at the five, Rui at the five, whoever you want.
I was about to say, yeah.
But this is going to give you some more versatility with those lineups to, A, kind of be bigger when you go small, and B, maybe have different options as far as who is necessarily the five or who's taking what responsibility to feel better about that, which is important, like not just in the regular season, but in the playoffs. You want to have different options, different versatilities to kind of combat and find a way to win different series. So I think that's good. And plus, you know, you can use Dorian Finney-Smith as a screener. Brooklyn dabbled in that at times. I'm intrigued. I think it's a good move. Makes sense for Brooklyn too. I mean, it's a little funny visually to see team trades Dennis Schroeder and then team acquires D'Angelo Russell, but it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Hey, you have picks. Is that an expiring contract? Mm-hmm. Would you like to have a conversation? Is that a young piece you also have? Can we take a look at that? Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, I'm sure they value Dorian Finney-Smith, but the Nets are in pivot mode right now. You got to find young pieces, find key pieces, find assets, keep flexibility, and keep it pushing. Like, Nikias, do you know the Nets rotation in Dorian Finney-Smith's first game with them?
What is it?
It was Dorian Finney-Smith, Royce O'Neal, Spencer Dinwiddie, Cam Thomas, De'Ron Sharpe, Joe Harris, Yuta Watanabe, Patty Mills, and Ben Simmons.
That's amazing.
Time moves fast.
It sure does. It sure does. And I think for however long D'Lo is going to be there, I guess that's probably where my mind initially goes. Like, is this finish out the year with Brooklyn, see what happens next? Is this move him again by the deadline? I think it was Brett Siegel that mentioned that D'Lo may become a buyout candidate. So, like, my initial thought is, like, how long is he going to be there? And what does that look like? As long as he's there, though, I think adding another pick and roll creator, adding a pull-up shooter, especially with the volume of switching that Brooklyn still sees, like, I think that's helpful. He's someone that's going to help them in transition. He's someone, as, you know, Cam Thomas is back and balling. If we can get Cam off the ball a little bit more comfortably, you can't have, like, the give and take between those two in the backcourt together. The defense may get a little bit interesting, but this year for Brooklyn, you're not competing for a championship right now anyway. So, like, that's fine, short term. But, like, I think those are two guys that could make life a little bit easier for each other offensively and should at least lead to some entertaining hoops at the very least. And again, if you're able to move D'Lo again and turn him into something else or another young player that you're interested in getting a look at, that could also be a good bit of business for Brooklyn. So I like the fit. I'm curious to see if Max Lewis actually gets some playing time in Brooklyn. They don't mind tossing out the wings and saying, let's see what you got. So I'm curious to see like what that looks like, actually get a larger sample on who he is as a player. But no, it seems fine for Brooklyn. And I'm sure, you know, getting D'Lo back in a spot, again, for however long he's there, somewhere he's comfortable, I think is a nice touch. You know, however much you care about that part, but like, it's cool to have him back in Brooklyn. I'm excited to see it. And then very quickly back to your point about like LeBron at the five, et cetera. Like, if you do have lineups with LeBron, Rui, and Royce O'Neal on the floor together. I said Royce, gosh darn it, Dorian Finney-Smith. You said Royce earlier and they got my brain tied. If you have the lineups with Rui, Dorian, and LeBron at the same time, like you have Rui defending your five and now you have LeBron when engaged and Dorian doing backline things, that is fun. That is a level of activity that you can dip into while still remaining small. And then you get the floor spacing and the closeout attacking on the other end. So I'm also excited to see what those lineup configurations are going to look like. Did you have any closing thoughts on this deal?
No. I think it'll be interesting to see how it kind of grows and what the Lakers want to do and if it kind of enhances their philosophies. But good bit of business by both teams.
Okay. All right. Sticking with the Pacific Division, I suppose. The Sacramento Kings also making some moves that I did not have on the bingo card. Following a close loss to the Detroit Pistons, the Sacramento Kings firing head coach Mike Brown, Doug Christie, former Kings player, current Kings assistant. Well, I guess not current now. Named interim head coach for the Kings in three seasons or almost three seasons with the Kings. Mike Brown with a 107-89 record, won coach of the year in his first year. They went 48-34, 46-36 last year. As of the firing, 13-18, again, capping it off with the Detroit Pistons game.
Come on with it, buddy. We had this conversation last week. Literally the day before.
We did. To peel the curtain back, as we always, you know, highlight the Dunker Spot watch parties, post them at the end of the watch, at the end of the pods, come check them out, etc. We were bouncing around the slate, just watching hoops. We get to Kings Pistons. I think it was early second quarter and the Pistons were up. And I was just like, hey, with the caveat that I don't think this season is his fault, how confident are we that Mike Brown is there at the beginning of 25-26? I did not know that literally the next day that we were going to get news. But like the basis of me asking that was just how weird things felt and how fed up Mike Brown seemed to be with these post games. Like I brought up a couple on the pod. It's like, these are kind of funny, but also this does seem like a lot. And I wonder how many of those he has left, regardless of how justified the actual rants are. Like, what does that look like? And then you think about the overall expectation level that the Kings may have had heading into the year. Again, you break the streak, you lose in the play-in next year, you bring in DeMar DeRozan, ideally to make your offense a little bit more versatile, make the clutch game even more devastating. And now you lose a bunch of clutch games and the West strengthens around you. And now you are like not only in the play-in or flirting around the play-in, you're kind of outside of it as of late. I personally look at the personnel and it's just like, well, if you don't have the shooting to kind of complement what De'Aaron, DeMar, and Sabonis does, if you're not able to find the right lineup mechanics to get the right amount of defense around those guys, well, if the personnel isn't present, there's only so much Mike Brown can do. And you look at some of the late game execution, and again, you listen to Mike Brown afterwards. If it's a, hey, this is the plan, please execute the plan, and it's to execute it, I don't know how much of that is on him. Like, I think lineup-wise, like, watching the Kevin Herter versus Keon Ellis thing has been kind of interesting. But even then, I kind of understood we want to get the defense to a certain place, so play Keon. Defenses are guarding him a certain way while we also have DeMar on the floor, while we also have De'Aaron on the floor, while we also have Sabonis on the floor. It may not be as cut and dry as play this dude that can juice the defense and juice the transition. Like, there's a lot of things to circle through. And I don't say all that to say, like, Mike Brown is blameless in any of this or that he's been a perfect coach. But I just kind of... it felt very, like, Borrego-y to me with how we had the conversation a couple of years back, where I kind of looked at the personnel and I was like, I don't know how much more you want it to be done with this. Independent of any locker room thing, because I don't have sources. It just felt weird to me for him to kind of be the scapegoat.
I mean, that's the nature of the business.
It is.
This is what happens. And we have these conversations after a coach is no longer there, as opposed to during the tough stretch. And so instead of thinking about it, walking through it, it's just, man, what's going on over there? It's not so good. Hey, that thing over there that was not good, it got worse. Hey, let's probably get rid of that guy. And then it's over. Mm-hmm. And so we don't take into account the steps or the movement or anything like that. And I have a point. So I like don't agree with it firmly. Just me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm stunned still. And like you look at this overall, like the great Rick Adelman coached the Kings for 8 seasons, guys. Mm-hmm. They won 53% or more of their games in all of those seasons. A lot of good coaches went to Sacramento. Not a single one of them got above 500, except for Mike Brown. He ends up winning 54% of his games and gets 2 seasons in a possible.
Yeah.
Less than 2 years ago, he was named the unanimous coach of the year.
Not just coach of the year, unanimous coach of the year.
And I mean, to me, it's, you don't want to conflate conversations, but man, the business is wild, has been wild, continues to get wilder. Like these windows to compete and win at a high level just keep getting slimmer. And it won't stop because of optics and noise and expectations. And for me, it puts me in a position to where I struggle to understand what is success for a coach these days. What is a good run for a coach these days? How long is that run going to be? Are you just earning yourself to get to coach the potential best version of the team? Like, is that the bit? Like, well, you got us to make a move. Now you got to win. Like, what's the end game?
Yeah.
You look around the league, like how many, like we've joked about it all year long. How many fan bases feel good about their coach? How many coaches feel good? What's the genuine answer?
It's, if it's fan bases, it's under 10.
Might be under 5. If you really break it down.
Yeah.
Ask a Memphis Grizzlies coach how they feel about Taylor Jenkins. You'll get a different answer every day.
Yeah, and like I think we both agree Eric Spoelstra is, if not the best coach in the NBA, is certainly one of the best. I think it's fair to say Heat fans haven't been super happy with the postseason this year.
So this is where it gets tricky, and I think it ties in to kind of what's going on. Do we think people know what the attempts are coaching-wise to try and maximize the team? Do we think people understand what a coach is trying to do when it looks a little bit different? This Sacramento thing, tying it back to the original conversation, bringing DeMar in theory, should A, help you in close games, B, put more pressure on teams, C, give you more balance in the half court to where we have movement, we can also just run other things. And we saw elements of that. We didn't see consistency from it, but we saw elements of that. And we saw a defense probably perform a little bit better than people expected, adding DeMar DeRozan. Mm-hmm. They just didn't have the results, you know? I was lonely on Kings Island for most of the start of the season. I felt pretty good about the check marks they were marking off on the way on the journey. I think they were hovering around, top 10 offense, top 10 defense for at least a couple weeks or so. Like, mm-hmm. they just didn't have the wins. Like, even when I looked it up once it was over, if I can actually scroll and read, they were 8th in offensive rating, 16th in defensive rating. Mm-hmm. Gone, done, over. It's improvements. Last year, they were 13th and 14th. No glass cleaning. It's just like, if you take a team that people don't think is very good and make them pretty good, you might get the credit as a coach because, we don't really know why they're good. Must be you. Mm-hmm. I got a question for you. You think people feel better about JB Bickerstaff last year or this year?
Probably this year.
Why?
Because the Pistons are better than they thought it was going to be.
Okay, so what's the end game? Now we think the Pistons are good, and now, okay, why aren't you winning anymore? Do you see the disconnect?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I was watching NBA TV. They had games over the weekend or whatever. Sam Mitchell was talking about it, and he had a whole point about Coach of the Year and how front offices kind of take in Coach of the Year. It's like, you take that as, you're really good. Now we have to raise the expectation level. You now have to take the next step. When really, and again, this is kind of paraphrasing what he said, but really, Coach of the Year is kind of a mark of we did more than we expected. So this isn't the standard. This is us getting the absolute most out of this, or us overachieving. And those expectations the next year kind of get muddied. And then when you don't reach that, then it's like, hey, what's going on here? That's kind of the point that he was making. Also, the point that you are generally making. And so it's just like, I don't know how you fix that in the West in particular. Because I think that's inherently an easy trap to fall into as a front office, because naturally you want your team to get good and get better. But then once you factor in, oh boy, the Rockets are fighting for a top 3 seed this year after missing the play-in. The San Antonio Spurs are in the play-in. I think they are two or 2.5 games out of a playoff spot. As of recording, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Suns, the Wolves have been weird. The Wolves are ahead right now. Not to speak about what the Thunder are doing right now. It's just like, we don't even have time to, or I guess the thinking is, we don't even have time to wait this out. And okay, we had a dip here, but next year we can really go after it. I understand why they feel that pressure to catch up or not be left behind. But I don't think that's super fair to, again, Mike Brown's the example today, to where I feel like there is obvious talent on the roster, particularly at the top end. But I don't know if they have the right collection of role guys to really maximize everything, at least not right now. And then you factor in one of your more important pieces to help round things out in Keegan Murray. It's been an up and down season for him. And so you factor all of that in. In a vacuum, I would like to see Mike Brown get more time. From the front office perspective, I can understand why they're like, we just made a big splash. We're falling behind. We need to find something. And once you add in the clutch meeting and De'Aaron postgame, and et cetera, it's like, well, we can't afford to upset that guy while we're trying to get this fixed. I would matter if we're going to take an optics hit, I would much rather do it with the coach and get a guy that our top guys vibe with versus wait this out, maybe bounce back, but now we're having a different conversation about De'Aaron Fox in the process. And then we're getting back to square one.
I think there are several things that factor. One, this is the age of keeping assets to a degree, if that makes sense. I hate to use the word assets, but you want to keep your talent. So you are sticking with the plan. That plan came from where?
Up top.
So if that plan came from there, now the plan isn't working, who gets the look first?
Not up top.
I mean, hey, man. Knock. You said this was the move to keep everyone together. Why are we not winning? Well, he's not. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? Let's tie it in Sacramento, for example. Whole lot of key on Ellis Love. Well-deserved. Really good player. But guys, you ever had like a, why are we paying all this much for the gym if you don't go to the gym conversation? Mm-hmm. You ever had a, hey, I bought this air fryer.
Why aren't we using it?
Mm-hmm. Could that describe two of the players playing ahead of Keon Ellis?
Yeah.
Gets tricky. Not a defense. I'm saying it gets tricky. Mm-hmm. So now we got DeMar, but you know what you have to do with DeMar DeRozan? Play DeMar DeRozan minutes. How many minutes is DeMar DeRozan averaging?
It's well over 30.
Okay. So that now takes a chunk out of your rotation. Guess how many minutes you got to play De'Aaron Fox? A whole lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, just on optics things, probably got to play Keegan Murray a nice chunk of minutes. Got to play Kevin Herter. Well, all right. But we don't think about that. We don't talk about that. We don't have those discussions. I just kind of wish it was in a better place with the conversations, you know? Like when you give the Clippers credit, are you talking about Ty Lue keeping this group together as well as what James Harden and Zubac and Norman Powell have done? Do you put it all hand in hand or do you just kind of go one or the other?
One or the other, yeah.
Do you, you know, my fear is we're making this coaching thing such a linear process and it's not a linear process. It's very hard to win games. You look at the Knicks and Tibbs. Think about if Tibbs didn't get the rope he got to a degree. Not the Knicks have been bad, but they took a hit.
Yeah.
They took a hit. They pivoted and moved, but now, you know, what's going on? You look at the Hawks. They took a hit. A hit so bad they had to make a move. And now look at where they're at. You know what I'm saying? So now, you know, you look at the Pacers. Are they that or are they this? They're a team trying to figure out how to evolve to the next step. It's not easy because there's a whole bunch of other teams trying to do it at the same time. And so just to even like tie it back to Mike Brown, you know, I can disagree with the sentiment and how he was treated and how it was done. My brain is always trying to go to, okay, how do we get here? I try to understand both sides to a degree. It's a flaw, but it's something that helps me understand thinking. You mentioned it earlier, expectations of winning. We added a piece. Everyone else taken off. What's happening? I think a key thing is like, we don't have the conversation. We could do hyperbole. This could be as simple as, hey, clutch games. What's going on with that? We'll be better. Okay, well, here's DeMar DeRozan. Hey, 11 of your 19 losses were by 5 or less points. I thought we talked about this. It could be as simple as that. 32 points, Nikias, is the margin in those 11 games. 32 points. That's it.
A singular Giannis game is the difference between.
That's it. You want to know another thing? Not to say it's fair, not to say it's right. 6-12 at home. Brother, I built a beam and we have as many home wins as the Toronto Raptors.
That is tough. And I think what Vivek has been sitting very closely watching those games as of late, as they're on the losing streak at home.
Five game home stand, they lost all five, combination of blowouts and close losses. Three of those five losses were by a total of 6 points. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think within that, because obviously the De'Aaron thing, the foul against Jaden Ivey, that's the most recent example. Like, wasn't the DeMar drops the ball on the short roll a part of that homestand?
Yeah.
In the Nuggets game, or was that a little bit earlier in the book? Yeah, like that's. DeMar catches the ball. De'Aaron is attached to Jaden Ivey, and we're probably not even having this pod segment. Or at the very least, it's a lot less likely that we're having this pod segment. It's a testament to how small the margins are, but also just how unfair and frankly unforgiving it can be. Like you mentioned, some of the numbers they are looked it up earlier this morning. They're 6-13 in clutch games this year, or they were 6-13 in clutch games at the time that they got rid of Mike Brown, and they were 20-19 last year. Offense has been good. Defense hasn't been. Whereas last year, the offense was kind of middling. But, you know, shout out to friend of the program, Mark Jones, who talked a lot about De'Aaron Fox in particular, ramping up his defense in close games. I will take on this assignment. I'll get this stop. I'll get this steal. And you get the mixture of Fox buckets and Sabonis hitting people. And this year, the clutch offense technically better, but now the defense has fallen off a cliff. As you're trying to figure out who to close with, based on the talent that you have and some of these mental errors. And I don't know how much of that you put on Mike Brown. Like, that's just tough. You know what I mean? And again, I say all of this as I just watched the Kings. I don't have boots on the ground getting sources. I don't have sources and getting inside info in the locker room. Again, like locker room stuff, similar to what I said about when James Borrego was let go in Charlotte. If you're firing him because of the defense, you got bad defenders all across the roster. I feel like that's a bad reason to fire somebody. But if there's him and LaMelo stuff or anything else that I'm just not privy to, I'd have to take my L and then, okay, that's just is what it is. So if it was a matter of Mike Brown has lost or is actually losing the locker room, that's going to override the X's and O's stuff with where the league is, because it is very important to keep your players and to keep your stars happy in particular. Not saying that's a bad thing, but like, duh. De'Aaron Fox is an all-NBA caliber talent who didn't sign an extension and has been on the record saying, I want to make sure we're going in the right direction before I commit again. And so, yeah, like you're probably going to side with him if you are worried about that actually becoming a thing. But it's, that's tough. Like you mentioned, Mike Brown just got coach of the year 2 years ago. He just got extended this summer.
June 1st was when we heard about it.
We ain't even a year from the extension. That's, yeah. It's just wild. It's really wild. It's really wild. But on that note, like we do just have, we have a singular game right now that the Kings lost. No LeBron. Lakers get the win anyway. So I'm curious to tap in with the Kings more and see like what changes X's and O's wise or lineup wise to see what's different. You know, funny enough, as De'Aaron Fox alluded to, at least Mike Brown's still getting paid during all this, which that was funny. It's been some interesting, like, microphone moments with De'Aaron the last couple weeks. But keep an eye on the Kings. We'll see if they turn it around. That's about all I got. But that's a tough situation.
Oh, man. It's, you know, it's honestly kind of wild. If you take a look, folks, if you're out there, just look at Coach Mike Brown's journey overall. Like the Cleveland run, go to the Lakers after Phil Jackson. You win 62% of your games, the lockout season. You swing for the fences. They fire you after 5 games. You go back to Cleveland. They say, they are bad. They fire you after 1 year. You do this in Sacramento, South, and it's crazy. Nick Geis.
What's up?
Do you mind if I throw some random basketball tidbits in here before we get to the awards?
Sure.
But I want to do something real quick. So with the nature of this podcast, I'm going to peel the curtain back, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like we've done a very good job of sneaking in a lot of Cleveland Cavaliers and Oklahoma City Thunder talk into the pod gradually. I feel like we've really tracked their progress and their journey as teams. Hey, they're pretty good. You know, hey, they're pretty good. Hey, folks, they're pretty good. It kind of leaves you in a tough spot when it's they're just really good. And we've already talked about a lot of what makes them very good. So yeah. It's like, see, like you don't want to do the I told you so pod, but like, hey, what else can we say? Cleveland's 27-4, best start to their season in franchise history. They've won 6 straight, all by 10 or more points, and have won 10 of their last 11. They lead the NBA in field goal percentage and 3-point field goal percentage, and they are a machine offensively right now. Mm-hmm. Darius Garland, I'm going to score. If you're in a drop, and make the play. Donovan Mitchell doesn't even have to play as many minutes as he could. He's been very good. Like, they're really good. OKC's 26-5. Best start in team history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've won technically 11 straight games.
I was about to say, speaking of 11.
Sending messages left and right. And I think it's been fun to watch them fly around defensively. Like, they help rotate, recover. Not a perfect world. We're going to figure it out. And two, the balance they've shown offensively, as far as Shea starting to figure out a lot more of this pick and roll stuff than people had anticipated. We're going to set high picks for Shea. He's going to go whatever he wants. We have Hartenstein on the short roll. We can still go drive and kick. We can still go handoffs. We can go pass and cut. We're just throwing more stuff in the half court menu on top of what we're doing defensively. So I wanted to make sure I gave them a salute. Real quick, my mind has been going towards the Eastern Conference. The Boston Celtics have won 5 of the last 10 games. I'm not concerned about Boston, but I will circle back to what I said earlier on a different Duggar Spot podcast episode. Hey, what if more teams just keep throwing this at Boston and they just got to deal with it a whole lot more? Like, it's not as fun as being able to just roll through things. The Orlando Magic, the most stubborn team of the year, in which they just refused to go away. A salute to Jamal Mosley. Which is interesting to watch teams be like, hey, you can't score. And the Magic be like, yeah, you're right. And then all of a sudden, neither can you. And now you're in a dogfight. The Atlanta Hawks, fun to watch. Like, I think the East should get more credit. Interesting time to bring up Tyler Hero, but I thought he bounced back very well before he was thrown to the ground. As far as handling two on the ball and activity, I thought against Atlanta over the weekend, whole lot of rejects, whole lot of one dribble. Wait, why ain't you open? Yes. That was going on. And then, you know, he kind of turned things around late in that third against Houston, saying, oh, cool, two on the ball. Yeah, come with me, hang out with me for a second. I can make plays out of this. So that was good for him. Salute to Tyrese Halliburton. Got sick of Boston, decided to turn the corner a whole bunch. That was fun to watch. Going west, Russell Westbrook's cutting off Jokic. That's very fun to watch. Believe in the Pistons.
Oh, there you go.
Shout out to James Harden, a.k.a. the return of Petty James Harden.
Clippers just keep doing it, and we are reportedly close to a Kawhi return.
Hey.
That seems pretty neat. Oh, Steve, can I drop my favorite tidbit? Yeah. Also doubles as your favorite tidbit, as you mentioned the Cleveland's offense. The Cleveland Cavaliers, as of recording, have the highest offensive rating in NBA history.
Are you going to do this every year?
As long as it's true, I don't know what to tell you.
I can't wait till it's a team you don't really believe in that does it, and you don't say it with as much joy and passion.
Oh, the Team X has the high, somehow has the highest, the flukiest offensive rating in it. No. But no, like, don't want to hang here too long, but when we talked about when Kenny Atkinson was hired, it was like we were both pretty excited and interested in seeing what he's going to do to the offense, what he's going to do with Evan Mobley, and just the bigs in general, because Mobley and Allen, under J.B. Bickerstaff to that point, have been used as hubs. So, like, what was the expansion of that going to look like? What kind of individual growth will we see, et cetera, et cetera? That turning into legit, you know, I made the, you know, the NBA history status there, but, like, just being the best offense in the league, period. In a league that also features Boston and New York, who was the recent holder of the best offensive rating in NBA history up until recently. Like, it's kind of wild that they jumped to this. It's been a really impressive season. And to your point about OKC, per Clean the Glass, 7th in offense right now. Remember, earlier this year, they were the best defense in the league by a mile, and they still are the best defense by a wide gap right now. But it was like 1st in defense, like 18th in offense, because they just couldn't hit shots. And so the fact that that has turned around to them now being a top 10 offense, Shea evolving, as you've mentioned, Jalen Williams being really freaking good, Isaiah Hartenstein adding to their versatility offensively. And they still have this defensive foundation without Chet Holmgren right now. It's terrifying.
I'm not going to lie. You're like two away without Chet Holmgren from me being like, are they better without him?
Well, don't do that.
I remember the John Morant conversation you had with me a couple years back, bucko.
Wow. That's kind of crazy. But no, like, it's just been impressive stuff for the Cavs and Thunder. So I'm glad that you shouted them out. All right, Steve, let's get into some award talk. We're going to start with MVP, as that is, you know, the easiest one to talk about, the one that everyone is most reasonable about. Before we dig in, as we are talking about award races this time, as opposed to all-star voting, games played does matter. And so as of Monday, the Monday night slate hasn't happened yet. League average for games played is 31. If we are working with the 65 of 82 format that is required to qualify for these, that's about 79% of games, which would mean you need to play at least 24 games, at least for me. 24 games played minimum is pretty much on par with that 79% of games that will get you to the 65 games out of 82. So players that will be missing from award talk only because of games played, nothing else, no hate, anything of the sort. Luka Doncic, who did unfortunately get hurt during the Christmas game, so I think he's expected to be out a month. So I think Luka is just going to end up being eliminated from award talk, period. But Luka Doncic doesn't meet the games played requirement right now. Ja Morant doesn't reach the games played requirement right now. And he just also had like a shoulder thing with Dame Tyson. We'll see how long he's out. LaMelo Ball, Damian Lillard. Tyrese Maxey is an interesting case. He's played 23 games, but he has played 79% of Philly's games as of right now. So he can be in or out, depending on how you feel about him. Jimmy Butler is another example. So those are some big names that won't factor in just because they do not reach the games played minimum right now. Just wanted to get that off at the top. Steve, before I ask you to reveal your ballot, how do you compare the vibe of the MVP race this year to where it was last year?
I don't think we know it yet. It hasn't gotten loud enough yet for me. Okay. To peel the curtain back and to add to what Nakia said, I simply forgot about the games played minimum for some reason and had to quickly shuffle a couple names off my list. So salute to Nakia for that. Forgot I had to do that. I should have just ignored it. It's fine. I mean, for me, I think this year is interesting. We don't have a Jokic and Embiid debate to live through this year. We probably won't have a Shea Luka debate this year based on what's occurred. So now it's what debate forms. And so for me going into it, my five names have been pretty solid all year long. Like for me, I balance it out to try and get to eight or 10, one in case of injury, and two, I have more fun evaluating that way.
Yeah.
Put you in there and see if you either play your way up or not so much. Great season, but also. But I don't know if it's going to have the same fervor because Shea's doing really good things. Giannis doing really good things. Jokic is doing really good things. And it hasn't heated up to that degree yet. It will once someone decides to put a stamp on more names and someone says, no, Jason Tatum's the MVP. No, Jokic, you know, and it'll heat up. But I don't know if it's at that same base that it was last year where you had the built-in, okay, this is going to happen because Embiid's doing this and Jokic's still doing that. And also these two, where do you order them? Like there's just a lot more. Two of them not being in the race, unfortunate because of the reasoning. But yeah, if we're talking just discussion-wise, it makes it a little calmer at the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think... To your point, I think there's going to be a core four in terms of the actual conversation. And then a couple others like, hey, what about this guy if this thing keeps happening? Type B. So I don't know if we get to the same fervor, but like I am starting to see some of the arguments bubble up. Hey, I thought we cared about record. Why we don't care about record no more? But defense, what's going on here? But this person's
having Stop. Look, if you are out here doing that, stop doing it. Stop trying to pull historical things. Don't conflate conversations. Make the case for your person and move on. That's all you got to do. That's all you have to do. I say this every single year. And then everyone's like, well, no, we talk about the Derrick Rose. Well, Derrick Rose, it's a whole different year. And I guarantee you don't even remember why Derrick Rose is the MVP. You just remember that Derrick Rose was the MVP. You don't remember half of these things you're referencing. You just see numbers. So stop doing it. Just talk about the person that you want to be MVP and why they're better. We're comparing very good things. It's not like we don't have to say one's really bad. No, I value this as a basketball person. So this is my MVP. Well, no, they ain't with nobody. Stop. You don't need the validation.
So it's there. And to your point, like, I do think it's going to get louder as this heats up. But yeah, just figured I would toss you that one first. Do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
With the MVP. Okay. All right. As of December 30th, who's on your list? Who's in your top five? Who are you thinking about?
Well, I'll give you the list of four. And then as always, I'll reveal at the end what the order is. Okay. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been incredible for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Second in league in scoring, 31 a night, shooting 52% from the field, 6.2 assists, 5.6 rebounds, 1.9 steals, 1.2 blocks, doing it on both ends of the floor. So the things that stand out to me with Shai this year, right? Mm-hmm. Shooting 54.2% on pull-up twos. Leads the league in drives per game at 21.1. Leads the league in points off drives per game with 14.9. Shooting 59.6% from the field on those. Very low volume, so don't yell at me, but he is shooting 54.5% on catch and shoot threes. He's shooting 72.5% in the restricted area as a guard, which, to put that in perspective, however you feel about big men and however you feel about Jared Allen, he's at 72.6. Shooting 53% from mid-range, eighth in attempts per game. Had a hell of a December. I think it's hard to take away what he's done for the Oklahoma City Thunder every single night offensively. Teams haven't necessarily felt that they've had a way to really take him away. And he's impacting and adding to his game, more pick and roll play, adding some more playmaking, more willing to shoot threes. It's been fun to watch him play. You know what's been fun to watch?
What?
Giannis Antetokounmpo. Mm-hmm. Just continues getting better. Just leading the league in scoring with 32.7 points a night. Just career high. 11.6 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.5 blocks, almost a steal. Shooting 61.3% a night on 21 shot attempts. Once again, State last year became the first player in NBA history to average 30-plus points per game on 60% shooting or better. He's doing it again. 17
with more points?
17 of the last 24 times we've seen Giannis play basketball, he's dropped 30. He scored 20 or more points and shot 50% in every game he's played this season. He's, one, it's the longest streak to open a season in history. Two, he's a game behind Shaq and Zion for the longest streak ever.
That seems good.
So, yeah. And considering where the Bucks were at and considering the way he bought in defensively and the push they made, Giannis is up there. Don't forget about Jason Tatum. Like, you might look at 25-9-5 and be like, eh. The only players doing it are Tatum, Giannis, and Jokic. And he's having a career-high year assist-wise, career-high year rebounds-wise, still shooting 73% in the restricted area, shooting 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. He's the engine behind Boston. They have a lot of good pieces. They work well together, but Tatum has to bring it at a certain level every single night. And, you know, keep in mind, we talk about Boston's defense, and, hey, they do a good job of switching. Well, Tatum has to be involved in some of that, so you got to give him some credit for that as well. Nikola Jokic, you know, third in points, fourth in rebounds, third in assists. First player in NBA history to have 100-plus points, 30-plus rebounds, and 15-plus assists in a two-day span.
Seems good.
I mean, just 57% from the field, career-high 20.5 attempts. 50% from three, career-high 4.5 attempts. Career-high 30.8 points with 12.5 rebounds, with 9.5 assists. If he could make free throws, we'd be flirting with like 50-50-90. But, you know, nitpicking. Luka Asterix. Donovan Mitchell. The Cavs are playing at a very high level. And yes, all of their, like, they, there's a reason I think they lead the NBA in having four or more players score 20 points in a game during the season. There's a balance with them. But I think Donovan Mitchell has played very, very well in a very consistent fashion, no matter what teams are thrown at him. And you haven't had to worry about him on either end of the floor. And I salute that. So if you want my order, Nikias, as of right this very second, Shai, Giannis, Tatum, Jokic, Donovan Mitchell.
Okay. I like this because we're going to have slightly different names, slightly different orders. I cannot wait to get the Steve facial expressions for this one. So, again, I already went through the list of players that are currently out for games played, et cetera. Number one for me is Shai right now. You already mentioned 31-6-6, nearly two steals a block. I have to go through all that again. First in EPM if you care about that. The Oklahoma City Thunder. So we're going to get into some on-off talk. I care more about the on portion than the off portion. But the Thunder are outscoring teams by 16 points per 100 possessions with Shai on the floor. And they're pretty much neutral when he's off the floor. For a team that is as good as OKC, the fact that there's that kind of drop-off is absurd. But even excluding the drop-off for a minute, plus 16 is ridiculous. And he is the figurative and literal driver of that number. He's been very good on both ends. The Thunder are 27-5 in his games he's played. That's an easy case to make for Shai. Number two versus three is where my first headache came in. And trying to sort through Jokic versus Giannis in my head. The Jokic numbers are ridiculous. As you just spit them out. Plus 10 when I'm on, minus 16 when I'm off. If you don't care about like the bad backup tax, et cetera, it's still plus 10 with him on in a year which Denver has been up and down around him. It's been an inconsistent year for Jamal Murray. It's been a solid season for Michael Porter Jr. But, like, he's had a lot of change around him, and the Nuggets have still been world beaters with Jokic on the floor. And this is with him averaging darn near a triple-double. Steve, you already mentioned the efficiency numbers on top of that. They're 16 and 11 in the games that he's played this year. You get to Giannis with his 33, 12, and 6, essentially. Bucks 13 and 11 in those games. So there is a games gap between the two. There is a minutes played gap between the two. A plus 0.4 net with Giannis on the floor, a minus 0.4 with him off. Though, funny enough, if you want to have some fun, the Bucks plus 6 with Giannis on and Dame on the bench. So Giannis still obviously can just carry lineups for you. But I was trying to parse through, like, the game slash minutes gap between the two. And then also, frankly, we've talked about Giannis' defense this year. Felt like it was a little bit below his level to start the year, but still fine. Over the past month plus, like, he's just been a DPOY level defender. It's been a lot more consistent. And I think comparing that to where Jokic has been this year, though some of that is understandable with some of the personnel change around him, the offensive burden that he's carrying, I think not rocket science. Giannis has just been a flat out better defender than Jokic. And so for me, it was trying to figure out how much do I weigh this level of defense from Giannis compared to what we've seen from Jokic to, I think Jokic is having a better offensive year and he has played more and team has performed better with him on the floor. They've won more games with Jokic available. I was in a tough spot.
So where'd you go?
I lean Jokic right now at 2 and Giannis at 3.
This is my not shot face.
You're not shot face. But, like, just those edges, give it to Jokic right now. But I do think if this is the level of defense that we're going to continue to get from Giannis, and ultimately, if the Bucks continue to climb up the standings, et cetera, like, we'll probably do another awards check, if not in January, then certainly, like, heading up into All-Star stuff or whatever in early February. Like, wouldn't surprise me if Giannis gets to 1, frankly. But at the very least, like, him and Jokic could very much just flip-flop. But I think because of those minor edges, I have Jokic at 2, Giannis at 3. I have Jason Tatum at 4. And then I got into headache number 2 and trying to figure out who the heck am I going to have at 5 for this? Because there are a lot of good candidates. You mentioned Donovan Mitchell. I think what will qualify as a hot take for this is, one, on the Mitchell front, he's been very good this season. I think this is elements of, like, the Devin Booker year a couple of years ago where Phoenix was just the best team in the West and or the league. But, like, some of the other stuff didn't have him up to par with, like, what Luka was doing, what Giannis was doing, what Jokic was doing, et cetera. And so, like, he didn't get that bump. Because the Cavs have been as dominant and he's sitting a bunch of fourth quarters, like, I don't think he's going to have, like, the box score necessary to compete with some of these other guys. So I don't have a Cav in at 5. My actual take, I'll float this to you. How would you feel about Evan Mobley as the Cavs rep? If they had to have one. Because of how impactful the offense has been, and ultimately, like, he has been DPOY level good defensively on top of that. And, like, we can get into some of the nerd numbers, too, to help build out the case. But, like, how would you feel about a Mobley Cavs rep case? Like, I don't have Mobley over, like, Shea or Jokic or anything like that.
Is Evan Mobley defended like an MVP?
I mean, within that lens, I don't think any of them have.
Donovan Mitchell doesn't get 2 on the ball?
Oh, it defended like an MVP. Oh, okay. I was thinking, like, defending at an MVP.
No. Here's where I stop. I don't know how many coaches are going in the meeting and say, we have to take away Evan Mobley. Here's how we're taking away Evan Mobley. Mm-hmm. So I can't get there.
Okay. I think it's fair. I guess the question I'll pose to you is, do you think there are conversations being had on the other end? Like, okay, we got to move Evan Mobley around because he'll wreck our offense if we don't.
Maybe, but I mean, I just saw the Houston Rockets run 98 pick and rolls of Bam Adebayo. Sometimes they...
That is also true, and that did not work out well for them.
It's not like they're stashing Evan Mobley's man in the corner. Mm. And you can't hide. He's a good rotation player anyways. Mm. But that's too expensive for my taste.
Okay, that's fair. I figured I'd float that one out there, but he's been really freaking good, though. You mentioned the defense. The offensive growth has been apparent. We've talked about the Cavs this year. More grab and goes, more self-creation attempts in general. Career high in true shooting, despite creating more of his shots off the bounce, which is not an easy thing to do. plus 14 with him on, plus 6.2 with him off. But a plus 14 with him on, that's a higher number than Donovan Mitchell right now. I think Evan Mobley's just been really good. But either way, back to like the five thing. It was between one, figuring out which Nick I wanted to think about here between Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. And then after landing on that answer, it's like, okay, what do we do with Anthony Davis? Who the Lakers are 18 and 12 in his games, 26 and 12, a steal and two blocks. He's also defended at a DPOY level. Lakers have 1 minute with him on the floor. And, you know, cited this when we did the All-Star talk. And again, more context to be added. But the fact that the Brow on, Braun off minutes have just been firmly positive is a shift and also impressive. So he was a name that I thought about. And then I thought about Wimby. And I'm just like, this is 26-10-4. He may just be the DPOY front runner right now. The Spurs have a winning record in the games that he's played. They are winning his minutes on the floor. If you care about the on-off differential, it is plus 4.8 with him on, minus 9 with him off. So what is that, like minus 13, minus 14? Or I guess a 14-point differential per 100 possessions, which is like generally MVP level. If you care about EPM, he's third in the league behind Jokic and Shea. I'm just like, you know, I can at least make a case for him to finish fifth. Ultimately did not land on him at fifth because, as we've talked about on the pod before, I do index the winning portion a little bit more for MVP than I do for all the NBA talk. And so 14 to 13 was just kind of tough. So I landed at Cat at five right now. And there's the Steve face. There it is. We got him, coach. But no, I landed at Cat at five. 25-14-3. Defense has perked up. On-off is good. EPM is good. Efficiency has been out of this world. Go ahead. Go ahead. We can talk about it.
Keep going.
21-9 in the games that he's played this year. I think he has been a figurative and literal large part of the Knicks offense being as good as it's been this year. Obviously, having a pick-and-roll partner like Jalen Brunson certainly helps. And again, I was between, like, who do I want to have between those two? I think either of them have been good enough to earn this designation. And again, by the next time we talk about this, I may flip to Brunson, or it may just be someone else entirely to take that fifth spot. But I did want to highlight what Cat's been doing. So I have him at five right now. You know, other times I thought about, talked about Wimby, talked about Brow. Talked about Evan Mobley, if there's going to be a Cleveland rep. Also, certainly wouldn't be opposed if it is Donovan Mitchell, because he has been quite good this season. As far as other players, like, it just kind of gets tough in terms of either winning or efficiency or any of the advanced things that I look at. But those would probably be like my core, like, eight, especially since Luka's just out at this point. Luka would firmly be – I wouldn't be having the top five debate if Luka was still healthy and was going to play. He would just be in that top five. It would just be some combination of Shea, Jokic, Giannis, Tatum, and Luka in freaking out the order there. But Luka not there, so had to pivot. That's where I'm at right now.
Did not think we would arrive at, and this is no respect to Karl Anthony Towns, but specifically, did not think I would hear Nekias Duncan put Karl Anthony Towns on his MVP list while also saying the defense is perked up. Nature is healing, I guess.
Nature is healing.
I don't know what to do with this information that's been presented to me. Did you have any consideration for Trae Young or James Harden?
I did, and that's where, like, the efficiency portion kicked in. I think if either of them make more shots, I think they have strong cases. I don't think many people anticipate the Hawks being where they are. The Clippers just having a playoff spot right now and the creation burden that James Harden has. And as we talked about earlier in the year, it's not like he hasn't been competing defensively this year. Like, I don't think if we get like old meme worthy Houston James Harden defensively, the Clippers may still be a good defense. They certainly wouldn't be what they are right now if he was that level. And so, like, they were names that I briefly thought about. I was like, okay, I don't know if they meet the threshold for MVP right now.
Would Kevin Durant and/or Stephen Curry slide Wimby out of the way?
KD's gameplay casualty right now. So I think if he continued to play, probably, because KD. The offense kind of speaks for itself. The defense I have enjoyed. It's been one of the few things I have enjoyed with Phoenix's defense this year. So I think KD would absolutely have a case if he qualified. Steph is a more interesting case for me. it's one of those I wouldn't be surprised if I could ultimately get there. Because I think, like, in particular, the on-off stuff is still good for him. EPM is still good for him. Obviously, shooting well. Like, the box score numbers aren't quite there. And I will say, like, there has been slippage with the defense with him, which is understandable considering offensive burden slash size slash, hey, we just want to go after you. And they generally just play smaller these days anyway. So, like, I could probably work my way to a Steph case. I wouldn't have him in the series discussion right now.
Does Kyrie Irving... What's more likely, Kyrie Irving replaces Luka on the MVP list or the Rockets slash Grizzlies get a candidate?
I think more... that's a good one. More likely is probably... probably Kyrie. I think there's going to be a bigger spotlight on Dallas. And, like, with Şengün, I think he also, like, no fault of his own, he's also operating under, like, Jokic, Sabonis, Şengün type beat. So, like, even if he puts up the 20, 11, and 5, it's just like, well, here are these other bigs that are also just doing that. So, I don't know if you get there. The Memphis case is where it gets interesting. Because I think if Ja was healthy, then he's the easy candidate to push for this. I think Jaren Jackson Jr., like I mentioned, Evan Mobley is, like, the Cavs rep. I'm fine with Jaren just being the Memphis rep for what he's done on both ends of the year, both ends of the court this year. I don't know if his box score is going to get there to, like, force his way into this kind of conversation. I think voters would just look at, what, like 22, 6, and 3 or something like that. And again, the defense, especially the box score stuff, is ridiculous. But I don't know if it would have to be Ja getting healthy and qualifying for games. Okay, excited to continue to track the MVP conversation and just the MVP races in general. Like, it's going to be a lot of cases that kind of ebb and flow. So we're going to have some fun. As we have already yapped quite a bit, complimentary, let's close with all NBA. And then we'll circle back to some of these awards on a later episode. Maybe the next one, maybe the next YouTube episode, we'll figure it out. But Steve, let's get into the all NBA teams as of today. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first with this one since you went first on MVP?
I can go first. Okay. I'll just list all three of mine out. That's cool. All right. Yeah. First team, as always, is just whoever I had for the top five of MVP. So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, Nikola Jokic, Donovan Mitchell. My second team is Anthony Davis, Karl-Anthony Towns, Trae Young, LeBron James, Jalen Brunson. Okay. Kind of got hit once I was told of some people that did not meet the requirements. And my third team right now is Stephen Curry, Domantas Sabonis, Victor Wembanyama, James Harden, and Jaylen Brown.
Okay. Not the Jaylen I thought you were going to go with, but I like it. I like it. Did the Pacers game get you? He's like, hey, he just does not
anything to say. It was a reminder. I mean, once I had to kind of pivot, it became Jaylen Brown or Kyrie Irving very quickly for me. Mm.
Okay, understood. Okay, well, for me, as you have your, hey, my top five is just my MVP. Me, I have the room for a little bit of difference with my first and second teams. Again, I value the winning more with MVP than all NBA. So my first team, have Shai, have Jokic, have Giannis, have Tatum. I have Wemby in the fifth spot over Cat for all NBA. Second team, I have Karl-Anthony Towns. I have Anthony Davis. I have Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. I also have Jalen Brunson. Third team for me, Jaren Jackson Jr. is in. Sabonis is in. Ant Edwards is in. And then I just had, similar to the All-Star conversation, it's like, who the heck am I filling these spots with? Because you can make cases for like 8 to 10 different people in these spots. But either way, have Sabonis, have Jaren, and I have Jalen Williams still. I do believe he's having an All-NBA caliber season. And last spot, I have Steph still for now. But I do think that Kyrie's coming. Şengün's an honorable mention for me. Bron naturally is an honorable mention for me. Made the All-Star team. Don't have him in right now. Trae Young, another guy that I thought about. You mentioned James Harden, another guy that's going to be in the conversation. Face is frozen. What's up, Steve?
No, you good.
Okay. Figured I would ask. As mentioned up top, like Luka would obviously just be on the first team if he was healthy, but not going to qualify. KD, another guy. Curious to see like where Ja ends up landing, and we'll see how long he's out with the shoulder and see if he ends up playing his way into like being eligible for this kind of thing. I think he's been very good. So maybe a two Grizzlies thing. We'll see if the scoring perks up for Şengün, or more specifically the finishing perks up, because I think he's right on the edge of being on an all-NBA team. He's certainly been all-star good at the very least. But yeah, I think that is where I'm at right now.
Okay. So no LeBron James for all NBA.
Not right now. And like ultimately, I was about to have the team with LeBron and Steph as honorable mention and going with Kyrie. Like I do think they're all just kind of in the same tier at the very least.
This is a historic pod. Cat MVP candidate, Wimby first team, no LeBron.
Hey, listen. It's been a fun season. It is a testament, all jokes aside, it's a testament to how like deep the talent pool is right now.
Mm-hmm. NBA is fantastic, man. Do you have your YouTube comment of the week?
Hey, listen. So about the YouTube comment of the week.
Oh, no.
I mean, naturally, it was our all-star pod. So a lot of comments were just, hey, why'd you have this guy over this guy? You know, hopped in the comments on some of those. Like, I think Jaren versus Şengün, again, that's going to be a very close battle as they are both spearheading two of the best teams in the West. For different reasons, like Şengün defense perked up. Obviously, what he does offensively leads it. Jaren has just been a two-way force so far this year, but probably doesn't have like the at the very least like the offensive box score stuff that Şengün has, for example. So like that was a fun little conversation to have there. But hey, honestly, kind of I was expecting a little bit more from the commenters this week. I'll be honest. I was expecting a little bit more. You got, you know, like I think for me, like I've referenced the Şengün and Jaren thing, like that was a I disagree and this is why I disagree. What do you think? I love those a lot more than you have player X over player Y. You're stupid. What did we learn? You know what I mean? Like I don't like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not even like tremendous work, Steve. But like it's less about like disagreeing, like. Again, it's for the all-star teams. It's like 24 spots for like 38 deserving players. Like there's going to be some difference there. Like I don't mind that part. But like if you feel like, hey, you should have, using that example, you should have Şengün over Jaren, I like when you give me the reasons why Şengün should be over Jaren. Even if I disagree, that's cool. There's not much I can do with you didn't have this, I don't like it. Okay.
And we have successfully gotten Nikias to go after the locker room. So I'm talking about get these free throws out here, big timer. Let's see what we can do. So Cleveland has yet to lose to a Western Conference team this year, Nikias. And the Thunder have yet to lose to an Eastern Conference team this year. Will that hold up going into their matchup on January 8th?
Ooh.
Now the Cavs are at Golden State, at the Lakers, at Dallas. OKC is at home against New York and Boston.
Oh, I don't think it holds. Doesn't hold? I don't think it holds. I don't think
both teams lose or just one?
I think both teams lose at least one.
All right. I'm going to type that. We will circle back next week. This is the last podcast episode of 2024. Last year, Nikias Duncan, you very boldly made an Atlanta Hawks prediction. Were you a year too early?
I sure was, man. I sure was. It was funny, like, making the Atlanta Hawks prediction, and then, like, two pods later, I was like, hey, I said this, I'm wrong. I am pressing the eject button, I'm taking the L, etc. And I look at all these wings and Trae Young, who's still not making shots at his usual level, but is doing, like, everything else. And we didn't talk MIP, we're going to talk about it on a later episode, but it's just like, they just have, like, three most improved player candidates. Lowers the keys, varying degrees. And we'll talk about it on the later pod. But like, yeah, I should have been patient. I should have foresaw that they would trade DeJounte Murray for Dyson Daniels and DeAndre Hunter would make all the shots and make quick decisions. And Jalen Johnson, well, I mean, hey, Jalen Johnson was going to be good. We can be honest. But yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. Funny or too early bit. You with the Atlanta Hawks or me with the Detroit Pistons?
I think funnier is probably me with the Hawks just because I have been like the Hawks person on the pod since his inception. So, like, the concept of me not having the Hawks portion nailed down is kind of tough. I think there's more meme potential there.
Okay. Power rank these players. Tyler Hero, Cade Cunningham, LaMelo Ball, Darius Garland.
Ew. Let me type this out, make sure I got the names.
Tyler Hero, Cade Cunningham, LaMelo Ball, Darius Garland.
Hero, Cade, LaMelo, and Garland? Yep. God, I don't like that at all. Okay. Garland, Cade, LaMelo, Hero?
Okay. Paul George or Bradley Beal?
Darn. shout out to the Dunker Spot Watch Party. I mean, in a vacuum, I still take PG. I would like for him to make shots, but like I have enjoyed virtually everything else.
Okay. What would you pay to find out why Caron Butler felt like that, or what Ime Udoka said to the refs?
I feel like it's Caron by default. No, you know. Okay. That's all I got.
And lastly, power rank these players: Jalen Williams, Jalen Johnson, LeBron James.
Jalen Williams, Jalen Johnson, and LeBron.
Yep. Oh, I should be this season specifically.
Okay, I was about to say. I feel like I know what my number one is.
Richie, edit that clarification out.
That's nasty. well, this season. this season is probably Jalen Williams, Bron, Jalen Johnson.
Okay. Right. Holding strong, holding steady.
I really appreciate the Jalen Williams season, I must say. As you can tell.
You don't say.
Also, can I just say, it's going to sound like cope, but like this is an earnest sentiment for me. As we were recording on December 30th, so it's literally LeBron turning 40 today. The fact that LeBron is in these conversations is just nuts. Is that not wild?
You know... If
that brother is 40 in all NBA conversations.
Mm-hmm. So what I need to happen is that video game character with the hat and the doubt button with the X.
That's
I just
crazy.
Need that to fill my side of the program. If we could just do that. Just pop that that's in there sickening. Real quick. As we hit the horns. Because I don't
if
think
I,
that's
if going. I watch, that's crazy. If I watch this back tomorrow and that visual is on screen, I am going to lose it. That's amazing. All right. Well,
not enough of a cleanup on aisle 23 there, bud.
Cleanup on aisle. Well, we have the pod title at least. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Naturally, we are on the Young Man and the Three YouTube channel every Tuesday. That is the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday. So if you want the visual elements, if you like the Steve reactions to when I give a take, you can get those every Tuesday. Join the Dunker Spot online watch parties if you haven't already. The link is in the description. We're watching hoops. We're playing video games. We're having a good time talking about life, et cetera, et cetera. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. You are not allowed to follow Steve, apparently.
No. New year. You can come on back. You can find me at Steve Jones 20. Come on down. Bring your nonsense to the table. It's a welcoming, inclusive place. I shaved off.
Amazing season.
Hey! Who knows what's going to happen? Hey! Why the YouTube channel infiltrate my day?
Oh, Jesus.
There we go.
See y'all next episode.
I don't know what happened.